The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello, and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. We continue with our article from last week from NationalGeographic.com. How to plan an epic road trip through Montenegro, the jewel of the Balkans, by Sarah Burrell, January 7th, 2023. Several of Montenegro's grape varieties aren't found anywhere else in the world, and many families still make wine in rudimentary cellars. But viticulture is far from rustic in the case of Plantager, Montenegro's biggest wine producer. The road from Skadar to Montenegro's capital, Podgorica, alone is flanked by some 11.5 million Plantager vines spread across 2,300 hectares, making this tiny country proud owner of the continent's largest single complex vineyard. It takes a full 10 minutes to drive from the gates of Plantager's headquarters just outside Podgorica along a repurposed military runway to its cellar. A 356-meter-long tunnel inside a bunker once home to a secret Yugoslavian-era aircraft hangar. Spiraling some 30 meters underground, the tunnel takes in tasting rooms where I try garnet red wines under cathedral-scale ceilings that once accommodated fighter planes. A 1999 NATO bombing saw the hangar abandoned, revamped years later by Plantager as a place to store its multi-award-winning wines, vintages with a top note of Bond villain lair. Into the north. Ivan the Terrible is searching for orchids. Just wild garlic here, he shrugs, or bear's garlic, as we also call it. The bears eat it in spring to clear toxins built up during hibernation. The mild-mannered botanist guide, nicknamed ironically after the tempestuous Russian Tsar, looks willfully around Biogradska Gora National Park. We have over 160 orchid species, but you need to come in early June. It's a carpet of wildflowers in. Montenegro's smallest national park is a powerhouse of biodiversity, from the tiniest orchid to towering ash, beech, and elm, trees that long ago celebrated their tricentennial and crowned the canopy of what is one of Europe's last remaining primeval forests. Strung between a trio of 7,000-foot mountains in Montenegro's north, Biogradska Gora is one of those places where your eye searches upwards for the horizon, and it's always a neck stretch further than you think. I follow Ivan along trails dwarfed by forested peaks, clouds strewn in their foothills, and the snow-capped summits engaged in an apparent bid to escape the Earth's atmosphere. We're circling Biograd, one of the park's glacial lakes, exploring its marshy fringes on deck pathways curtained with sweet fern. You can chew that for energy. It's mountain fuel, says Ivan. Imagine hiking up there. He points to precipice heavy with spring snow and bringing all you'd need to survive for the summer, including a herd of cows. Above us lie pastures where farmers will soon set up cottoons, wooden tent-like huts where they'll live near their livestock during the summer grazing season, visited by the occasional overnighting hiker. There's no electricity, and you wash out of a trough. But you sleep like a baby, says Ivan. Unless you mistake one of the cows huffing around your hut at 3 a.m. for a bear, he grins sheepishly. It happens. This is wild country, where mountain trails run forever northwards, encountering little but livestock. And, if you're lucky, brown bears, along with wolves, lynxes, and wildcats, all of which call the park home. Hike north to the Via Dinarica, and you can trek right across the Balkans, says Ivan. The 1,240-mile mega trail began life here in Montenegro in 2010, completed 7 years later, taking in 8 Balkan countries. Montenegro's north terrain is best explored on foot, or in some places, by car along wilderness roads called panoramic roads. These are no Sunday drives. Some 50 miles east of Bjelovarska Gora, a route called Dermator Ring encircles the mighty massif from which it takes its name. Here, 50 peaks reach 6,500 feet, rising to 8,278 feet at Babatov Kuk, Montenegro's highest mountain. Impassable for half the year, the road climbs through narrow, winding canyons that I find still banked with freshly fallen snow. Burrowing into a succession of deep mountain tunnels carved through rough, unsealed rock, I'm accompanied by bats flitting in front of my windscreen. It feels like going spelunking in a car. Casa de Pino is an unexpectedly urbane find in Dermator's shadow, with an infrared sauna, a library of locally foraged herbal teas, and electric rental bikes. The Echo Hotel in the small town of Zabjak has rooms crafted from local pine, with energy-efficient insulation and a ground source heat pump. We started building during lockdown, so we're still catching up, says manager Danica Baranin. But we aim for complete sustainability with roof photocells to generate power. Breakfast comes from the hotel's farm. Eggs, olives, dried fruits, and crisp cucumber, along with homemade cheeses, smoked charcuterie, and breads. Built by a local doctor now living overseas, the house became a hotel. Rather than have it stand empty, the family wanted to give something back to their hometown, says Danica. There's really nothing like this around. Elsewhere, functional chalets comprise Zabjak's hotel offering, catering to skiers in winter and hikers once the snows recede. Montenegro is currently investing multi-millions of euros to expand and update the handful of small ski towns scattered across its north. It put 50 million euros alone into Colesen 1600, which became the country's first new resort in 30 years when it opened in 2019. There's scope for the region's existing hotels to be rebooted. A savvy developer is needed to reimagine rather than raise the clutch of angular 1970s megaliths. Once winter playgrounds for the Tito-era Polterati, shiny ski resorts were requisite accessories and the notoriously lavish lifestyle of Tito, the communist revolutionary architect of Yugoslavia. I find traces of Tito deep in Dermator National Park, hidden among the 400-year-old pines encircling Black Lake. Is a tiny cave where Tito headquartered for a week in 1943, planning a battle that would lead allied countries to recognize him as the leader of the Yugoslav resistance. Just over a year later, Montenegro became part of the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, a federation of Balkan states that lasted from the Second World War until 1992. Today, naught but a rustic plaque marks the spot. I clamber back down to the shoreline through the black pines that lend the lake both its name and its blue-black hue. But the trees aren't doing their job today. The water shines glacial turquoise in the sun, and I stop to drink from one of the little streams feeding the lake. Icy rivulets tumbling down sheer canyon walls that will soon become the thundering tumults of meltwater, whose roar will echo across the park. But for now, all is silent, save for the croak of warty frogs announcing the coming of summer. Coasting along. Down south, where Montenegro meets the Adriatic, summer has already landed, along with a plump squid and a fearsomely toothy barracuda. Today's catch, beams Misko Radonovic. I usually get up at 4 a.m. to dive for fish. I love to start the day in the water. We're on the terrace of Misko's home, from where he runs Blue Mediterranean, a B&B with rental apartments. It overlooks a fittingly huge stretch of sea at Prizno, a former fishing village set around a gnarly promontory of rock thick with olive trees. Here, Misko and his family offer breakfasts and pre-booked dinners of traditional coastal cuisine, rich in fresh fish, pasta made by his mother-in-law, and a ricotta-like cheese curing in baskets hung around the terrace. This rather Mediterranean scene is augmented by chatter, punctuated by distinctly Italian phrases. On the coast, we use many Italian words, says Misko. The Venetians were here for centuries, long ago now, but our grandmothers almost all speak a sort of Italian. The snows and Slavic sounds of Montenegro's north feel remote here in Prizno, but given the country is some 18 times smaller than the UK, its extremes are well within day-tripping reach. If it wasn't for wildly undulating terrain, you could cover its 150-mile diameter in a couple of hours. But with such show-stopping scenery, that's hardly the point. My journey south has followed the Tara River Canyon as it carves through jagged castles of overhanging rock. This is where zipliners make plunging leaps across deep-drop gorges and rafters ride ice-blue rapids that recall the high Himalayan rivers of Kashmir. But all routes from the mountains to coast, it seems, are equally as thrilling. I journey to the mansion-studded old capital of Setinje, then to Lipa's vast karst caves, where passageways descend through dripping forests of stalactites, stalagmites, and ghostly pillars. Above ground, the road continues with almost as much downwards determination. Hairpin bends over a sheer-sided mountain conclude with a dramatic halt in the Fjord Deep Bay at Kotor, Montenegro's UNESCO-treasured Venetian-walled city. Pushing onwards, I discover a string of Albanian-settled villages descending from Skadar's lake country to the cliffside town of Stari Bar. Hellenic, Roman, Byzantine, Slavic, Venetian, and Ottoman cultures have called Bar home, a hilly snapshot of Montenegrin history. Topped by a medieval fortress, the Roman-founded citadel rakes so sharply down the cliff that my hotel has five floors, each somehow at street level. At my hotel, I enjoy traditional Turkic hospitality, family dining in a dry restaurant, where tables heave with skillets of grilled lamb, peppers, and smoky flatbreads. I take tea back in my room, served on a little rug, as call to prayer rings around the rooftops. Montenegro's glitziest hotel addresses, just 40 miles north along the coast, could not provide a sharper contrast. Here in Lustica Bay the following night, I find myself dining on sushi in a gated resort replete with Russian yachts and a private marina owned by the Chetty Hotel. It never really slowed down here, says Tamara Jovicic, the Chetty's immaculately linen-clad sales executive, when I ask how pandemic travel restrictions affected business. I guess our clientele doesn't have to rely on scheduled airlines. The private jet demographic has been largely responsible for the rise of Montenegro's richer resorts over the past decade, and the market shows no sign of slowing. Another 6 big luxury hotels will open on the bay within the year, says Tamara, as lightning illuminates Lustica's long arc of tree-lined shore, an early arrival of summer's humid storms. The clouds have cleared the following morning, and Tavat is shining bright on the headland across the bay. Rounding the cove to this former naval base that has been transformed into yet another of Montenegro's Monte Carlo challenging marinas, I'm almost blinded by its arsenal of shiny super yachts shooting laser gleams of sun off the water. Ignoring the glare, I turn sharply inland and then up, up, and up, zigzagging 1,000 feet along a cliff-snaking road to the hamlet of Gornja Laspa, where the blaze of the coast calms into the green of olive groves and grape trellises. The small settlement of 19th-century stone houses was once home to 500 residents and 7 olive mills. Gradually, people moved down to the shore for work. There were only a few households left, says Dejana Slipovic, but we're reclaiming the village. Dejana is renovating her grandfather's house to be a rental for travelers, and she guides visitors around the one remaining mill and houses restored as cultural centers by Napredic, Gornja Laspa's NGO-led heritage association. I try hand-pressed pomegranate juice harvested from newly revived groves, the fruit chosen as a village emblem, a symbol of collective strength, a plenitude of seeds protected within a tough and resistant skin. I find this poetic mission statement in an Napredic pamphlet pinned to a notice board in the town square, where volunteer restorers can sign up to NGO-led courses in the specifics of local stone architecture. With its EU application made a decade ago, Montenegro still hopes to be granted membership, and with that, funding for infrastructure and arts. But in the yawning interim, NGOs have claimed heritage projects like Gornja Laspa. At a neighboring house, I have coffee made Turkish style on a museum tea stove that surely dates to the 1920s. We have so much here, Lestajana. Furniture, photographs, war medals from after Yugoslavia and long before. They all tell the story of Montenegro. It's a story we want to preserve. That was How to Plan an Epic Road Trip Through Montenegro, the Jewel of the Balkans, January 7th, 2023. Our next article is from NationalGeographic.com. How to Plan Your Pilgrimage to Montenegro's Sacred Spaces. Off the beaten path, these monasteries offer a more contemplative way to explore the Mediterranean country's stunning coastlines, rugged mountains, and turquoise lakes. By Kimberly J. Graham, April 5th, 2023. A country the size of Connecticut, Montenegro has been at the crossroads of East and West for centuries. Its distinct spiritual heritage draws thousands of pilgrims. Many of Montenegro's 1,000 Christian and Muslim religious sites have long been abandoned due to conflicts from World War I to the Balkan Wars. But more than 50 of its Christian monasteries remain active and open to the public. Some have experienced a renaissance in recent decades, with young monastic communities revitalizing neglected sites. Others persist due to the dedication of a sole resident monk. Set against backdrops of turquoise lakes, dramatic coastlines, and rugged mountains, Montenegrin monasteries offer travelers glimpses into a different era. They showcase elaborate frescoes and architectural styles from Byzantine to Ottoman. Here's how to experience a few of them. A land of war. Montenegro has a very interesting cultural heritage that is not found in any other country in Europe, says Adan Prekic, a history professor at the University of Montenegro. By 100 BC, the Roman Empire had fully absorbed the Balkans, including present-day Montenegro, into its provinces. In AD 395, Montenegro was the dividing line between the Catholic-centric West and the Eastern Orthodoxy of the Byzantine Empire in the East. With the arrival of the Slovenes in the 7th century, Eastern Orthodoxy quickly dominated the region. After Montenegro freed itself from the Serbian Empire in 1455, it became one of the last free states in the Balkans. But the following century saw occupations by the Venetians and the Ottomans, who brought Islam to the region. This all affected the region's architecture and history. Ostrog Monastery. Established in the 17th century as a place of refuge from the Ottomans, the Ostrog Monastery is an architectural feat. Carved into the cliff face of Ostrogska Greda, near the tiny village of Dobojevich, the structure's stark white exterior bear gold leaf frescoes, a stark contrast with the stone mountain. The monastery has two sections connected by a steep forested path. The lower portion houses the Holy Trinity Church, where visitors can admire vibrant frescoes. Each year, thousands of pilgrims crawl or walk barefoot up the path to the Upper Ostrog Monastery, where they pray in front of the remains of St. Vasiliji, 1610 to 1671, known locally as Miracle Worker. The saint's body is guarded by a priest and covered with an embroidered blanket. People believe if you go to the Ostrog Monastery and you pray in front of the body of St. Vasiliji, that your wishes will be heard and that your diseases can be cured, says Marianne Van Twillert, author of Montenegro Off the Beaten Track, 21 Adventurous Road Tours. This is very popular, not only with the local population, but with the Muslim and Catholic people. They all believe in the miracles of St. Vasiliji. Every May 12th, pilgrims commemorate his death by embarking on a 25-mile pilgrimage from the capital city of Podgorica to Ostrog. Beska Monastery. More than two dozen medieval abbeys dotted the islands and Lake Skadar during the Balsic dynasty in the 14th and 15th centuries. The region was strongly influenced by Greek monks from Mount Athos, an Orthodox spiritual center. The abbeys thrived until the 19th century, when occupying Turks destroyed most of them, but around 10 of the Orthodox sites remain. Visitors can explore this history at the Beska Monastery, located on a small isle on the lake's western shore. The sanctuary was abandoned for nearly 400 years, but a decade ago, a group of nuns started bringing it back to life. It holds two churches, including St. Mary's Church, with traces of Greek, Byzantine, and Slavic frescoes. The nuns are also reviving arts, such as icon making, where religious images are painted on wooden panels. These devotional objects are sold to visitors to support the site's upkeep. Church of Our Lady of the Rocks. Hundreds of tourists venture to the Venetian city of Porras to see the small blue-domed church floating in the Bay of Kotor. According to local lore, in 1452, two brothers, one suffering from a leg injury, spotted an icon of the Madonna and Child here on a rock protruding out of the sea. They took the stone home and went to sleep. In the morning, the icon was gone and the brother's leg was healed. Believing it was a divine message, locals erected a shrine to the Madonna, stacking rocks to form a small island where the icon was found. In 1630, the Roman Catholic Church claimed the site and built a new chapel. Renovated in 1722, the Church of Our Lady of the Rocks features more than 2,500 silver plaques donated by sailors who credited their safe return from the sea to the Madonna's protection. Its walls and the ceilings also hold 68 frescoes by Tripo Coccoligia, a famed Baroque artist and native of Porras. An adjacent museum houses Illyrian artifacts found nearby, paintings of local ships, and a tapestry, Love and Faith, woven by a local artist. Crafted over 25 years while she waited for her sailor husband to return from voyages, it depicts the Madonna and Child in silk, silver, and gold threads, and the artist's own hair. Each July 22nd, since 1938, the city has celebrated Fascinata to mark the brothers' discovery of the icon. Residents decorate boats with ribbons and flowers, then fill them with rocks and sink them around the island. That was How to Plan Your Pilgrimage to Montenegro's Sacred Spaces, April 5th, 2023. More on Fascinata Porras. The Fascinata is an annual traditional event held in the picturesque town of Porras, Montenegro, every July 22nd. This unique ceremony involves the local community gathering to deposit stones around the island of Our Lady of the Rocks, thereby helping to preserve the island structure. This tradition, deeply rooted in the town's history, sees participation exclusively from men who perform this task to the accompaniment of traditional folk songs. Remarkably, this custom has been continuously observed for over 500 years, enduring through wars, natural disasters like earthquakes, and even the recent global pandemic. The name Fascinata originates from the Italian word fascia, meaning band or bandage, a nod to the practice of tying boats together as they carry stones to the island, adorned with branches of common ash. This ritual is not just for tradition's sake, but serves a practical purpose. The sea's erosion, especially during winter, necessitates these annual reinforcements to ensure the island's stability. Our Lady of the Rocks stands as the Mediterranean's sole artificially created island. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.